Welcome back to the FPL Lounge podcast. We are back with our game week 25 preview, a double game week for a handful of teams. My name is Chris Hopkins and I'm joined by the Valentine's Day keeper to my Valentine's Day substitute. It's Andy Case. Andy, I'm sure that you're not a Valentine's Day celebrant anyway. I'm sure it's not something that really interests you, too commercial, I'm sure. But I know that you've got plans this Valentine's Day. Share them with the listener.
Well, what I'd challenge anyone really to find me anything more romantic than a trip to the Den on Valentine's Day. Notoriously romantic location. People who are very kind and loving towards each other often frequent that venue. And going to go see the Mighty Tractor Boys at Millwall away.
I would say last time I went to the Den was with you. Wasn't on a Valentine's Day, but it was to see, I mean, I wouldn't describe them as the Mighty Tractor Boys, but I did go see Ipswich with you there away, and was probably one of the best live games of football I've ever seen. And I am loath to say anything positive about Ipswich Town, but away fans, very good. Lots of singing, lots of atmosphere. Obviously pack out in their numbers, which isn't a huge shock, but having only ever been to Portman Road before, which is incredibly quiet, I think, for a ground of its size, I was very impressed with Ipswich's away support.
They do usually get a decent following, yeah, and obviously London is a particularly useful one, right, where, you know, it's a relatively easy away game to get to compared to some of them, so that helps too, but yeah, I mean, I don't know if you've been recently. It's not exactly like Portland Road has become raucous, but for 4 or 5 years now, they've had this Blue Action group that have had a bit of a singing section going on. So there's a bit more atmosphere if you're sitting near them. Yeah, it's not like particularly raucous necessarily still, but yeah, they're usually continuously singing. So, and obviously the big home crowds have helped in the post Mick era as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously there was a big result tonight in the Championship. Southampton losing sort of opens the door up, I guess, again for Ipswich to take advantage. And yeah, maybe still we will be talking about them in the FPL Lounge next season. I hope not, but you know, I hope so for you equally, weirdly. So
I mean, I saw a friend who's a Leeds fan at the weekend, and we both had a conversation about what will be the outcome of our friendship at the end of this season if we are trundling towards what could be an Ipswich versus Leeds playoff final. And that, it just doesn't, obviously, well, clearly doesn't end well for one of us in the most literal of senses. And it's just not a nice position to be in. Playoff finals are just, obviously, if you win and you go up, great. But even if you win, you know, you don't feel good all day until that happens, right? It's just a horrible day all round. And yes, obviously for one team, that is completely mitigated by the fact that you get promoted, but you still have felt crap and tense all day. And then obviously for the other team, you add then after that feeling crapness, real sheer disappointment and guttedness at the end of it. So what could be or should be like a great day in the footballing calendar for you and an experience that you may remember potentially for the rest of your life just doesn't really end up being a great day feeling wise all round for everyone.
I mean, interesting you say that. I wouldn't know. We Colchester have not been in, well, I think we are same as Ipswich in the sense that we've never been to the new Wembley. I think that's still true of you, isn't it? You haven't been to the new to the new Wembley. So yeah, but I think the last time Colchester were made a playoff final was 1997, I want to say. Might have been the 97-98 season. So yeah, a bit before my fandom really kicked in. Definitely wasn't old enough to go to Wembley, the old Wembley at that point. So yeah, I wouldn't know. We've had one playoff campaign since, and that was in COVID, so didn't even get to, I say, enjoy that. But yeah, I mean, the semi-final weight, you know, that or both legs of that, you know, not a lot of work was done, what was done those days. But yeah, I still had to sit at home and watch it on telly, because I think my cardboard cutout was there at the home leg that I, you know, loyally purchased. But beyond that, yeah, not a lot going on. So yeah, I wouldn't know. But yeah, I it is one of those, isn't it? You know, we've both been to a playoff final for the National League, haven't we, together? To see a friend's team, and yeah, I guess there's elements of you that is just like imagining that the fans are soaking up the day and enjoying themselves, but ultimately, yeah, I imagine you're quite racked with nerves. So yeah, not a fun
that,
one.
That particular friend that we went with as well is one who's known for his emotional peaks and troughs, shall we say, as well. So yes, a very up and down, but ultimately up day for him that day. So yeah, that was good.
But ultimately, they've been to Wembley a lot, whereas, you know, we're still waiting. So yeah, maybe this year for you, but yeah, I'm sure it'll be it won't necessarily.
I mean,
be
I'd rather not.
Day.
Let's no, just go off automatically. That'd be good.
Sure. Anyway, let's plenty of EFL chat, and you know, sometimes it's perfectly reasonable for Andy and I to indulge ourselves, but let's get back to the matter at hand, and that of course is Fantasy Premier League. As always on our shows, we'll start by running down the Game Week 25 fixtures. We'll have a quick chat about this week's talking points. We will be going through our players on the radar, though it does have a very similar feel to our Game Week 24 preview. Nothing to swim against this week, so we're going to be trying to catch each other in our honey traps, and then we'll finish as we always do with captaincy and a little game we like to call Who the Heck is Stat? Let's start then by running down those all-important double Game Week 25 fixtures. Your FPL deadline for this double Game Week 25 is Saturday the 17th of February at 11 o'clock UK time, and that's because lunchtime kickoff is the Brentford versus Liverpool. Then we've got five 3 o'clock kickoffs. They are Burnley versus Arsenal, Fulham versus Aston Villa, Newcastle versus Bournemouth, Nottingham Forest versus West Ham, and Spurs versus Wolves before we finish Saturday with a tea time kickoff, Manchester City hosting Chelsea.
On Sunday, we've got Sheffield United versus Brighton and Luton versus Man United, and a Monday night football, Everton versus Crystal Palace. Then the football continues as the double game week we've long been talking about kicks in. First on Tuesday, the 20th of February, for Man City versus Brentford, and then on Wednesday, the 21st, for Liverpool versus Luton.
Let's just recap those double game week fixtures then, Andy, because ultimately there are four teams on the double game week, but two of them have pretty horrendous fixtures, and two of them have pretty good ones. And it just so happens that the two teams with the good fixtures are probably the ones that you're going to have plenty of FPL assets from anyway. Brentford and Liverpool at home and Man City away, not particularly great double. Liverpool with Brentford away and Luton at home, a pretty nice looking one there. Luton have Man United at home and Liverpool away before City will end with City with Chelsea at home and Chelsea at home and Brentford at home. So two home fixtures for Manchester City. They've also been, Andy, in Champions League action tonight. Champions League's returned, and it was a pretty strong team from Man City. They are probably one of the few teams in the Premier League at the minute with hardly any injury issues. So yeah, I guess in some respects we got City's strongest team. You know, we saw Kevin De Bruyne start, Phil Foden started, Erling Haaland started, and defensively I think they've got a pretty clean bill of health at the minute as well. They did pick up a few injuries, I think, tonight. I think Jack Grealish went off in the first half. I think Bernardo Silva has possibly come off with a bit of a knock as well. But still, I guess going into the double, it does feel like there was a prioritisation perhaps of this Champions League first leg away fixture. Be interesting to see if that has any impact on the double game week that we've got ahead of us.
Yeah, I mean, when the game started, it seemed like City were absolutely dominating Copenhagen, and it seemed like that they would that there could be a situation where they're three or four up and after 60 minutes can withdraw a load of the big guns, right? That didn't transpire. They did end up just in injury time managing to secure a two goal cushion, but yeah, a lot of the main players were still on the pitch, so it gives you a slight worry. But that said, you know, City are in a title race and they will want to be playing as many of their best players as they can in for as much of both of these upcoming league games as they can, I think. So, yeah, I It's so hard to know with Pep, isn't it? You'd think it wouldn't, although in these big games in particular, he's a bit notorious for not really making many substitutions, isn't he? And that did sort of play out in that he only subbed Grealish, one of the starters, because of injury. And then so the only other like sub that was his choice in some respect was Bernardo Silva for Nunes. So Foden played the full 90, KDB played the full 90, Haaland played the full 90. It's maybe not what you want to hear for your FPL teams, but it is the truth. So I don't think he's got the luxury of benching all of them. If I had to have a guess, I'd say De Bruyne with his recent injury history and stuff might be the one that Alvarez could come in for, given that Alvarez is like fully rested. And or then Haaland getting a bit of a break as well with him coming back from injury relatively recently too. But you mean you never really know. So this was almost the opposite of how I expected it to play out, and it is a little bit of a frustration, particularly, you know, as spoilers ahead, when we get into a captaincy chat, the absolute agony and pain and frustration of a situation where Haaland is benched in this first game would just be infuriating. So I mean, I've gone around the circle a bit here, and I feel like I've ended up on it may have some sort of impact, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of interesting that, I mean, I guess this must be indicative of their season generally. I know that there are more subs in the Champions League. There's still 7 subs in the Premier League, but I think they've got like 9-ish subs tonight. But the bench doesn't look particularly strong for Man City. And if Jack Grealish is out and Doku ends up playing in the league, then, you know, in terms of their sort of senior outfield sort of bench options, it's Julian Alvarez, Manuel Akanji, Mateus Nunes, and I guess arguably you can say Rico Lewis is a senior player at this point. You know, there's not a lot of chopping and changing to be had there. I guess if you own a Man City defender, then Akanji might well be in that rotation. So if you own a Walker or a Stones or an Ake, then yeah, I mean, we don't know what's happening with Josko Gvardiol. He wasn't in the squad even tonight, and was benched at the weekend. So seemingly some sort of injury there. But yeah, there can't be too much rotation because they simply don't really have the squad depth anymore. But I think you're right in picking out De Bruyne and then maybe Haaland as potential rotation options, given their recent injury history and the fact that, you know, Julian Alvarez is probably their standout option off that didn't end up starting tonight. So yeah, let's we'll have to wait and see if Pep says anything in his press conference, but he rarely does. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see on that one.
I mean, just one key thing to mention, though, not necessarily from a rotation point of view, but from like a tactics point of view, in that we'd kind of suspected that if he was going to play just the one recognised holding player in Rodri, as they did against Brentford, that it would be De Bruyne probably the one playing a bit deeper. And I didn't manage to see it much of the game itself, but based on the average position and the players' heat maps, it would look like it was Bernardo Silva the one next to Rodri, and De Bruyne are actually playing as a full-on 10 and even more advanced than Haaland at points. So that's quite an interesting thing to note in the sense of like De Bruyne's upside particularly.
Yeah, that is a good tactical wrinkle, because I think that was something that we had discussed before Kevin De Bruyne come back to full fitness. Speaking of fitness, I guess the other team with a big double game week this game week is Liverpool, and we'll come on to this slightly on the radar. But obviously, you know, we are waiting on any Mo Salah news. I think for us in particular at this point, Andy, it's going to be pretty difficult to make the money to get Salah into our teams anyway. But we're also going to be sweating on Trent Alexander-Arnold injury news, given that he came off at halftime. Well, seems from what Jurgen Klopp has said as a precautionary measure, but it is a knee injury and seems to be a recurrence of his recent injury that's kept him out. So he came off at halftime in the Premier League at the weekend, is currently flagged in the game. I guess it's going to be a bit of a wait and see, but, you know, ultimately, that even if Trent manages to play some minutes in this double game week, you know, the advantage of it being a double is almost out the window if he only ends up playing one of these fixtures. And I think that the key thing for Liverpool, of course, is that they've got a cup final on the horizon, So it's to what extent Klopp might end up prioritising Trent perhaps for that cup final, rather than risking him in these double game weeks. And obviously, given that, you know, Liverpool are also in a title race, but given that one of these games is Luton at home, I guess you have to be considering Trent's upside or Trent's expected minutes, given his recent injury history and the fact that he was hauled off at half time in their last Premier League game.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a concern. And I think what adds to everything you've said, there's no point me repeating, and I agree with, and an extra factor as well, is that the kind of fantastic form of Connor Bradley before he had to depart the squad for the last couple of games adds that extra layer of confidence, doesn't it, that if you were wanting prioritise Trent resting for the Carabao Cup final, that Klopp will now feel even more confident in that he can play Connor Bradley in games, particularly like Brentford and Luton. So
yeah, there feels like there's a real able deputy there, which there perhaps hasn't been before Bradley's emergence ultimately.
Yeah, exactly. So Trent injury news is worth having here as in the talking points, because it's so key to a lot of people's moves in this upcoming double that info, if which we may not get clarified, but in an ideal world, hopefully if we do, will be massive for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just worth mentioning. I think you mentioned it on the last pod, Andy, but obviously Connor Bradley's recent absence has been due to compassionate leave. I think he is now back with the side. You know, it isn't injury related ultimately, so there's no fitness questions with him. And yeah, as you say, before he went on that compassionate leave, he was tearing it up, frankly, in Trent's absence. So yeah, I think there's plenty of upside to him if he does end up back in the team, and if Klopp decides not to risk Trent. Also worth pointing out at this point that we are recording this, as you might have guessed, given some of the City chat, quite early for us in our game week scheduling conflicts, including what we mentioned at the top of the show regarding Andy's visit to the Den on Valentine's Day. Means that we're recording this on a Tuesday, but I think given the fact that it is a double game, we've got quite a lot of information ahead of us already, so it makes sense. But yeah, we are still a good few days away from any sort of Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola press conference, so yeah, I guess it comes with that sort of caveat. Final thing in the talking points, Andy, I think this might be hard to make succinct, but let's do what we can, is the look ahead that we've kind of both been doing mentally for our own teams, but also for the benefit of our listeners to blank game week 29 and how best to navigate that. I think ultimately, we're looking at our own teams and are wondering how we're going to navigate what is going to be a pretty big blank game week. At the minute, we've only got three guaranteed fixtures, and there's a very easy path to there only being perhaps at best four fixtures for that game week, and none of the teams involved in that are particularly appealing from an FPL point of view. And obviously, if you do what we discussed, I think last week or maybe the week before, and in FPL parlance, dead ending into that game week, then you have limited transfers between now and then to field a team. I think it's going to be pretty hard without taking hits to field 11 in that game week. So maybe you're thinking about 8 or 9. And then I guess if you're going to do that, there is always the option to free hit instead. And I guess, Andy, at this point, it's kind of just worth encouraging listeners to do their research and think about what best suits their team in terms of using that free hit chip, or maybe leaving it for kind of an attacking free hit later in the season. But equally, you know, making sure that you're not completely short for blank game week 29 is important. And then I guess before we just get onto the radar, you know, if you're bringing in players this game week that are very unlikely to play in game week 29, then I think it just feels to me at the minute like there's a lot of attention on double game week 25, but not a lot on potentially a very big blank in 29. And it's not actually that far away in terms of free transfers.
No, it isn't. And it's a really horrible period. In fact, this whole time, really, from New Year up until this blank, like, is just such an awkward period of FPL. Yeah, probably the worst bit of the season, really. So for trying to plan things. And yeah, it's on the one hand, you you've got lots of doubles and blanks that we need to have been thinking about, and planning ahead for navigating all of them is so complicated and requires so much like dedicated time, and there are marginal gains to be had. On the other hand, whilst obviously we often advocate for like looking ahead to these to try and, you know, frankly, just being knowledgeable of them without having done even that much research gets you ahead of a lot of the people in your mini league, so that helps. But in this particular instance, I'd say that the severe carnage of a game week 29 means that even for the most able and time rich of planners, there's only so much they're going to have been able to have done to prepare like for game week 29 in a mega meaningful, helpful way. Like, yeah, some people will have 8, 9, 10, 11 players already planned to be starters in game week 29, which is great compared to those who may only end up with 6 or 7. But that level of gain in terms of the quality of the types of players they're going to be is arguably potentially not necessarily huge. And also when you throw into the fact that actually with zero worrying or planning, you can just go, well, I'm siphoning that off to a free hit. That's my free hit week. I'm not going to cause myself the stress. Yeah, there's kind of a relatively good on the mental well-being option here that is the free hit in 29, which yeah means you can't use it later in the season. But I think without getting into all the details of it, we've kind of worked out that it seems there'll be less navigating between Liverpool and City players in particular that would be necessary late in those free hit blank and double game weeks later in the season. So it might well be arguably easier to deal with without a chip. So it's supposed to be a level of fun to this, as much as both of us get unbelievably infuriated by the game, as everyone does at various points during the season. So try not to stress too much.
Yeah, I mean, just on that point, I feel like I don't think I've necessarily said this out loud to you this year, and I say out loud like usually it'll be over you know, a message, but there have been times this year where I've just thought, sod this, I don't think I'm playing FPL anymore. Like, it's just increasingly frustrating. But yeah, I've had a nice game week this week, so I'm all smiles again, and you know, all is right with the world. But yeah, I think I completely agree with what you're saying. But yeah, I do think that's the key point. And one of the things that we're really trying to do, I guess, in the FPL Lounge is try and give you that mini league edge over those that aren't paying any attention. So yeah, having a think about 29 is I think important. But yeah, I think it's worth reiterating that making some transfers that do not feel particularly fun when there is that free hit chip to be taken advantage of is definitely worth thinking about, because yeah, the teams that are currently scheduled to play in game week 29 are not littered with high quality FPL options. So yeah, have a think about it, and yeah, any questions, FPL_lounge is where you can go. Let's move on then to our radar, Andy, and once again, no one on the center of our radar. And I think I said at the top of the show that this radar is going to look very similar to the game week 24 one. I guess that makes sense given the fact that we've known about this double game week for a couple of weeks now. Darwin Núñez is remaining on the mid-range, and I think arguably is on there as a solo Liverpool asset. I think Diego Jota can still make a case to be there. He keeps returning, but his underlying numbers, as we've mentioned multiple times, are increasingly poor. And obviously there is still a fitness question mark over Mo Salah, not to mention his incredibly high price. But Darwin Núñez's underlying numbers just get better and better, don't they? But I just can't believe in it myself. I understand why he has to be on the radar. I think even despite the blank, if this was a good finisher, I think there'd be a real case for him being on the centre this week. But I just can't get on board with it. And I, in my view, hats off to you if you can. I think he warrants his place on the mid range, but it's a no deal from me, Andy.
Yeah, and we said that last week, and like I say, I can understand why. But his number, I mean, there have been, you know, take your Patrick Bamfords, your James Madisons, your Jack Grealishes. There have been a number of people that I would have never gone near in some seasons that managed to change my thinking. And whilst I don't believe that Darwin Núñez hasn't improved as a finisher necessarily, the chances he's continually getting, and you know, we ridicule him, but you gotta give respect to the guy who just, he does not let it affect him. Like, he keeps going and going and going and going and going. And the numbers now he's putting up, like, yeah, you'd want him to finish better than he does, but the numbers are outrageously good. Like, he is, just to put some facts on it, he's top for non-penalty expected goals in the entire game. He's moved ahead of Haaland, Salah, all of them. He is top over the last six games. To add to that, he's third in the entire game for expected assists as well. So obviously those two things combined put him top for XGI in total as well. It's outrageous numbers to the point where his finishing being so poor is starting to matter less because of just the sheer volume of chances. And even more so, that's true when he's got two games worth of lottery tickets this week, not just one. So I think it's almost guaranteed that Darwin Núñez returns at least once this game week. It's like the level of numbers is putting up, it's almost, if assuming he plays 120, 150 minutes or more, he's almost guaranteed to like get a return. If there was, and I'm surprised there isn't this yet, but if there was like betting on FPL points, you know, like his, say, over what, if we're saying a return assist, like, so that would be like 5 points if we're saying a guaranteed assist, right? If it is over 4.5 points line, this game week would just have to be like so short, you know, like 20 on, or it probably wouldn't be that in the betting because they'd have some margin. But for me, it just seems almost so certain. And so in that sense, you know, someone who's so guaranteed a return, albeit in a double game week, you'd want multiple returns ideally, but just looking at it as a player in a game week, that certain of getting a return is all you can really ask for, isn't it? So yeah, those factors combined mean that he, like you say, could even maybe sneak a case for the centre, but certainly deserves the spot here.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. He's currently the fifth most owned forward in the game. Watkins, Alvarez and Dominic Solanke are more owned than him. Two of them are cheaper than him, which I think is worth mentioning too. But I think all three there, Watkins, Alvarez and Solanke, are some of the most transferred out this week. And Haaland and Darwin are some of the most transferred in. Obviously, you know, they're both on double game weeks, and that completely makes sense. I guess if you're looking at this game week in isolation, which isn't necessarily the best way to go, but like, you know, does Darwin Núñez have a better chance of returning in his two fixtures this game week against Brentford and Luton than, you know, Ollie Watkins does in their fixture against their one fixture against Fulham, or Dominic Solanke does in his one fixture against Newcastle? And then I guess with Alvarez, you know, he's a minutes risk, even though he's on a double. So I can absolutely see the appeal. I can't help just think he's the most frustrating own in the world in the game. And yeah, it's just, it's not something that I can particularly get on board with, but I think that's more a personal thing rather than an FPL strategy thing. And I think that, yeah, if he's got those numbers, which he does. And as you say, Andy, I think you make a decent point that, you know, we've seen forwards before, Patrick Bamford being perhaps the clear example of, you know, the volume of chances is such that he does score eventually, and therefore he's still worth owning, even if he is underperforming those underlying numbers in quite the way that he is. So yeah, I mean, do you have any thoughts or any additional thoughts on Jota and Salah, you know, while we're here? Because I guess they're kind of, I guess Salah in particular is sort of on the mid range. I guess Diogo Jota really is kind of there, particularly for this game week. Obviously, you know, all three of these players will end up blanking in 26 as well, so you've got to be prepared to bench them or move them on straight away. But yeah, I mean, Diogo Jota, you know, still just a vibes pick for you, but worth taking the risk this game week if it is a midfielder that you're looking to bring in.
A bit of a vibes pick, yeah. There's a bit of me that wonders if Salah were to return, how does that impact him for the better or the worse? Because on the one hand, you'd think maybe the worse, because is Salah, Darwin, Diaz the first choice front three? Quite possibly. But on the other hand, if Jota gets any minutes, particularly if it's a start at number nine with Salah being on the right, you'd think those XG numbers would significantly increase. Like if he was to take the type of XG numbers that Nunes gets in that position, then you're absolutely talking, right? Because this is a guy who can snaffle chances. So, yeah, he just is in and around opportunities. It's weird that it's not showing up in the numbers almost, because it always just seems to be in and around opportunities when he's on the pitch. I guess clinical in that sense. So still like him, albeit expensive for that, the lack of underlying numbers. And then Salah, yeah, the difference this week to last week really for me is we could well get a clearer indication of his fitness level. Like you can't expect managers to tell the truth and like, oh my God, Eddie Howe must have pissed off God knows what number of FPL managers with his just outright lying, frankly, about Anthony Gordon last game week. But Klopp isn't necessarily quite as guarded as that in press conferences, and that there's a reasonable chance that we get some fair clarification on Salah. He's been pictured on grass in training with his teammates, so he's not like separate early this week already, and that's usually a decent sign. So we could get a message from Klopp that he's good to go, and if so, then yes, he's expensive, but that certainly gives me a lot more confidence in him than we had this time last week. And if obviously big if you've got the money, but if there's a route to him for you, that is a lot more, you know, he will be on penalties if he starts, and he is a more reliable asset ultimately. So yeah.
Yeah, I think Salah's return does ultimately affect the expected minutes of both Darwin and Jota in some way, shape or form. But yeah, I guess there is also the expected minutes risk, perhaps with Salah, especially with two game weeks so close together and having had his injury. So yeah, it's a bit of a minefield this game week and for these three assets. But yeah, there's definitely plenty of upside to chase depending on which one or two, I guess, potentially you end up going for. Let's move on, staying in the mid-range, Andy, and we've got Man City assets to get to here. Let's start with the ones that were on the mid-range last week, and that's, I guess, the group of Man City defenders. I think, obviously, we spoke about Josko Gvardiol last week, and I've already mentioned that he is sort of noticeable for his absence in Man City's squad tonight and was on the bench at the weekend as well. So he feels like an avoid at this point. But Nathan Ake at 5 million, you've got a fit again, Manuel Akanji at 4.9, although he started the weekend but not in the Champions League tonight. Kyle Walker and Diaz, I think, are 5.5. And then you've got John Stones at 5.3. I mean, broadly speaking, any of these feel like the good pick, but Nathan Ake does, I guess, feel like the standout one. Just because he is cheaper and the amount of games that he has started. He's also got that versatility, unlike, say, Ruben Diaz, in the sense that Ake can play at left-back and centre-back. So plenty to like about him. I guess he would be the standout City defender if we were to sort of choose one.
Yeah, I mean, the only extra thing I'd add, and maybe there's some recency bias here, so I'm caveating that up front, because me reading, because we're off the back of the Copenhagen game, and I'm reading perhaps a bit too much into the average positions here. But we were last week worried about the minutes of Ake and Gvardiol, and frankly Walker with Stones' return. I mean, as that played out, Walker did end up flipping well getting benched last game week. But interestingly today, both played, so Stones was a centre-back, Walker was the right-back, but Stones has seemingly stepped into midfield from centre-back and not from right-back. And so that thing that Guardiola likes to gain by playing Stones, he seems to have been able to do without shifting Walker out of position, right? Or not having Walker in the team at all. So that's an interesting wrinkle, I think, going forward for Walker's potential minutes. I mean, I'd be interested to hear more off someone who saw the game happen, live. We were sat planning this whilst that was happening. But just from the average positions, at least, it looks like Stones was stepping in from centre-back and so Walker was still able to be in the team. So that adds a little bit of extra kind of confidence in Walker's expected minutes. He is like 0.4 more than Ake, 0.6 more than Guardiol. But if that theory were to hold, you'd think his expected minutes might therefore be more certain than either of theirs. So yeah, that, a potentially interesting one from tonight too there.
Yeah, makes sense. But yeah, I think including a Kanji in that mix is, yeah, it does throw a spanner in there. I think from my point of view, I think that a Kanji is perhaps the only City defender that seems to be able to do all of the jobs. Like, he stepped into midfield, he's kind of been in the Kyle Walker right back, he's done left back a bit, and he can play in the Diaz role. So I don't know if that affects things a little, but I still think ultimately if you were picking City's best four defenders, Akanji's probably not in that, but I think his versatility maybe helps him out. Like, he can kind of come in for any depending on which one is rotated. So yeah, I mean, picking City players is a minefield, and that's, again, we mentioned in the talking points, yeah, there aren't loads of attacking rotation options, but it does feel like there's always going to be one defensive rotation in some way, shape or form, and you can get lucky, I guess, and end up with a player that starts both of these games this game week. But it's going to be hard to know which.
The Akanji point is fair, because I suppose if you totaled up all of the minutes from Champions League and Premier League games last season of Man City defenders, I wouldn't be surprised if Akanji came out top. He seemed to be, we mentioned he was on the radar for us a number of times last season, not only because he was one of the cheaper options, but because he was the one getting the most starts and the most minutes for City. So there is, I suppose, like last, we would have said last season's first choice City 11 was Stones, Diaz, Ake and Akanji, right? Mm. With maybe one or the other of Ake and Akanji playing left back or centre back. And now this season, so I suppose in that sense, it probably still is Stones, Diaz, Ake. And then maybe this is that question of whether is it Akanji or is it Walker that's the fourth one in the first choice four, if you like. I don't know. Obviously, this season you'd say Walker, given the amount of starts he's had, but obviously Akanji's been out, and
Stones been out for a lot of the season.
Stones has been out. Yeah, now Akanji's back. Would does that change things? I guess. Yeah, TBC.
Yeah, it is really hard to know. I think I did debate at the back end of thinking about my transfer ahead of game week 24 whether to just go for Edison because he feels like he's guaranteed the minutes, but yeah, it doesn't get bonus points really, whereas some of the City defenders do, and it just wasn't I couldn't afford it either way. So, but it was something I think about, I guess, if you are desperate to get City defensive players in, then Edison is probably the safest place to go, but yeah, I think there is, you know, Ake's got assists and goals recently, and is cheaper, so I think he's still probably the play. Kevin De Bruyne is another Man City player that's going to feature on the mid-range. He's moved up from the fringe last game week. He has a pretty outstanding assist every 54 minutes of Premier League action since he's returned, but is prone to rotation. Is a premium asset, but is cheaper than perhaps he's usually been in FPL. I think he's still under 11 million, which is pretty rare for KDB. I think you gave me some words off air, Andy, that were a little bit like, he just seems like he's in the mood. He's back to being KDB, and that kind of makes you want to own him. Obviously, he's got a goal and assist tonight as well. I guess the major question with him is how do you do it? How do you get him in, and is he worth the outlay, given that there are still some high-performing City midfielders that are cheaper than him?
Yeah, I mean, that does affect things, to be honest. Like, thinking about it now, we've got him there on the mid-range, but we probably put that before the game had finished tonight, and, like, you know, 90 minutes in the Champions League, I really don't love, I suppose, ahead of a double game week, just because I think he could well start at the weekend, but whether he starts both now is maybe a bit more in question. And if you are going to invest that much money, you maybe don't want that question mark. On the other hand, he's shown he gets returns even when coming off the bench in games he's played since returning from injury. So
yeah, I mean, he's got more returns off the bench than he has starting in his last four game weeks, which, you know, small sample size, let's be frank, and City were chasing the game in one of those, so I think that's got a big impact. But yeah, he's got three returns off the bench and only two returns when he started in the four games since his injury. So I guess at the very least it proves that he can do it off the bench.
Yeah, true. And I suppose the upside, rather than looking at it negatively about two starts in a double game week, the upside is it sort of significantly increases the chance of at least one start, right? Mm. And therefore, you know, if you know you're getting Kevin De Bruyne in one home game for Man City, that makes him like a great own. So,
yeah. I guess it's just trying to do it and having the money to do it. And I guess Phil Foden is an increasingly good FPL option. Yeah, he's also got, did he get a goal and an assist tonight as well? And obviously he got a hat trick only two game weeks ago. You know, looks increasingly important, and is almost £3 million cheaper than Kevin De Bruyne at this point. So I guess it's to what extent you feel covered by Man City players with Phil Foden. Also, I guess a Phil Foden that's probably got higher expected minutes this double than Kevin De Bruyne. But equally, I totally understand it is almost an intangible appeal of someone like Kevin De Bruyne, because he is KDB and we know he's so good and he can create something out of very little. He just feels like a more exciting, intriguing pick, I think, doesn't he? But yeah, not necessarily kind of any stats to back that up, but yeah, on the eye test he's just pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, he has, it's just that, you know, we know the ceiling of KDB and he looks in incredible form. So yeah, one thing we can add, that this is the advantage of recording post the City game, we're very grateful, thank you to UEFA for organizing the Manchester City game on the Tuesday, is that Guardiola has commented on Guardiola in his post-match press conference, great. And he has said that Guardiola will be out for 2 to 3 weeks. He has ankle ligament injury, so that pretty much takes him off our radar entirely, I'd say.
Yeah, and I guess that gives us really 5-6 if you count Rico Lewis, but for the sake of this, let's not count Rico Lewis, but that puts, you know, essentially five defenders into City's rotation of four. I mean, that does mean in theory that three are going to start both games, right? It's just which three at that point. So interesting and difficult to pick, I guess, especially given that three of them are over £5 million. But yeah, given his previous starts, I feel like Nathan Ake is still the safest and best value pick there, or is the best combination of safety and value. I guess the safest pick is probably Ruben Dias, but if you can afford him, then fair enough. But yeah, definitely won't be one that I can do, I don't think. Yeah, anyway, let's move outwards, Andy, to the fringe. And we've got two players that still remain here. Alejandro Garnacho, I think we mentioned last game week as a good enabler with decent underlying numbers. I think he's still under £5 million and is still looking pretty good on the eye. I think we watched most of the Man United Villa game together at the weekend. I don't think he necessarily had any big chances, but definitely looked like one of United's more threatening players. And I think it just seems to me, again, a bit of an intangible, but he's kind of really matured so far this season. And I think, if you're really looking to get some money back into your team, especially if you are selling Cole Palmer at the moment, then yeah, he's probably the best sort of very cheap budget midfielder available in the game. And then up front, in terms of budget forwards, Elijah Adebayo still feels like a reasonable pick. Obviously, this comes with the huge caveat that Luton do blank in game week 26, but as things stand, they double in 25 this game week, albeit it's not a particularly kind double. They double in game week 28 as well, and of the teams that aren't currently playing or currently guaranteed a game in game week 29, the Luton fixture is one of the more likely ones to go ahead. I guess if there was any guarantee of that, Andy, then it would make Adebayo a very popular pick, but obviously we won't know before this double game week, or frankly the blank. So I guess there's some advantage to holding on Adebayo, but equally if you want to go early or if you're replacing a blank game week 26 or with a blank game week 26, then Adebayo's not the worst place to go to make some money back.
No, exactly. And yeah, like if you know, reasonable chance of playing in 29, definitely doubling in 28. If it frees up money for like a Salah move in particular, then there can definitely be some justification for it. And yeah, obviously if you're going to be free hitting again in 29, that's another upside of that mental release that you get from that. Even more reason why. Yeah, I mean, he's still sixth, I think, for non-penalty XG in the game. So yeah, like good, right. Decent underlying still as well.
Right, stuff. Anyone else then, Andy, that you're keeping your eye on? I think there are a couple of players here that have some caveats to them, which is probably why they're not on the radar, but are definitely still worth thinking about, depending on your strategy in the coming game weeks.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess I thought we ironically, we had this guy, we swam against the tide of this guy a few weeks ago, but I guess our point now would be we've got 4 weeks of data under our belt about where he's at fitness-wise and whatever, and performance-wise, and that is Ivan Toney. His numbers aren't completely outrageous. He's in the top 10 for non-penalty XG and XGI since his return, which is obviously fairly good. He's about 8 mil, is he? 7.9, something like that. So he's not...
8.2.
8.2 now. Wow, he's gone up. So yeah, he's fairly pricey, but the upside being he doubles in this game week 25, plays in 26 and plays in 29. So he solved a lot of those problems we were talking about earlier, and is on pens and has reasonable underlying numbers. So yeah, obviously, you know, health warning that the double is about as bad as it possibly could be for Brentford this game week in that they have Liverpool and City. But yeah, just worth, I thought, mentioning and potentially someone to keep an eye on. And yeah, obviously we need Trent news, but if we get any and we hear that he's out, as we mentioned earlier in the talking points, I mean, Connor Bradley becomes a fantastic option. He may not start both. They may go for some other option about, I don't know how Joe Gomez is getting on, and he may get one of the starts, but Connor Bradley's been so good. Like, if I'm a Liverpool fan and Trent's not available, I want him starting both games, really. He looks like a Trent light, doesn't he? And yeah, obviously small sample size, and can he do it consistently? Yet to be seen, but seems like worth giving the guy a go.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. I think he's currently 4.1 million in the game. And yeah, if we get anything negative on Trent's fitness, and yeah, it feels unlikely that he's going to be, or likely he's going to be out, then yeah, it feels like Connor Bradley could be, it's almost like a risk worth taking, I think. Like your alternative at right back for Liverpool is Joe Gomez. And I feel like Connor Bradley is absolutely that risk worth taking, I think, at the minute. And yeah, Toney, I broadly like. I think it's, I think if you are looking to dead end into 29, I think he definitely has some upside, although, you know, equally, whether you did it this week or not, given the tough fixtures, kind of remains to be seen. But Brentford's run does definitely improve after game week 25. Spurs are a team that I'm looking at in general, Andy. It wouldn't be any transfers that I'd advocate this week, because they do also blank next week. But I think, just looking at their shape, how they're tending to play and who's playing, I think for them is important at the minute, especially given that they've now got a pretty fit front line again. Madison's back, Son's back from the Asian Cup. Obviously they signed Timo Werner, and Brennan Johnson's been getting some game time too. So how Spurs line up, I think, is going to be quite interesting in this game week. And it's one that I'm keeping an eye on, because they do play in game week 29. So if you are a dead ending, then Tottenham transfers in coming game weeks, I think, is going to be quite popular. So it's worth having an eye on them now to see who you think might be worth bringing in. But yeah, I think Spurs attackers in particular are going to be some that I'll be keeping an eye on. Let's leave it there. Pretty long radar, given it was almost identical to last week. But you know, Andy and I can talk for England. But when we return, we will be swimming. No, we won't. We're not going to be swimming against the tide, Andy. We're going to be trying to catch each other in our honey traps.
Here at the FPL Lounge, we are keen to hear from you. You can join in the conversation on Twitter or Instagram at FPL_lounge. We will preview every game week throughout the season, exploring options for your chips and transfers. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your pods, so that you have all the information you need before the game week deadline. Thanks for joining us in the FPL Lounge.
Welcome back then. So, honey trap this game week, but let's just recap last week's swimming against the tide. We swam against Dominic Solanke being the third most transferred out. He did blank, but still had a pretty encouraging performance with 5 shots and 1 big chance. And he's got some reasonable fixtures on the horizon too. He's got Newcastle this game week, who obviously have one of the worst defences for underlying numbers in the game. Then it's Man City, which is pretty difficult. But yeah, then Burnley in a double game week. So I think pretty much, still worth holding Solanke as far as I'm concerned. Honey traps this week, though, Andy, there wasn't a load to swim against. I think there often isn't when we do double game weeks, because some of the transfers are pretty telegraphed. But yeah, what have you got in your honey trap this week?
Yeah, well, transfers dominated by obviously like Liverpool and City players. So understandable there, most of them. Christopher.
Yes.
Andy. With my honey trap this week, I need to get something off my chest.
Oh dear.
I am sick of Manchester United being described as the inferior club in Manchester. I've had it. I'm done with it. Right?
Okay.
On today of all days, where our saviour, Sir Jim Ratcliffe, has been approved officially by the Premier League. And on top of that, Fabrizio, The Telegraph, and the big dog, sound the alarm. David Ornstein is reporting that the situation for Dan Ashworth to Manchester United is likely to develop rapidly.
Okay.
I am no longer accepting that we are the smaller club. We're on our way back. Here we go, boys. My caught in the honey trap this week is a match bet that Hoyland and Garnacho will outscore Julian Alvarez. Our youngsters are better than yours. The future is ours. Manchester is red.
Okay. I mean, I loved that. That was great. That was great showmanship. If I could take you up on just pure showmanship in some way, shape or form, then yeah, absolutely, I'm taking the overs on Andy Casey's showmanship every day. I don't love this match bet. I don't love siding with a guy that has expected minutes issues, albeit with 2 game weeks, versus 2 players that one is on the radar, and I think if one had maybe better fixtures, might be unlucky not to be on the radar. I think, you know, our radar ultimately, especially on the mid-range, is dominated by Liverpool assets. And I think if they were on single game weeks, I think Hoyland would be in with a shout of being on the fringe as well. So I don't love it. Obviously, United also do have that fixture against Luton, which on paper feels great. You know, Luton are a different prospect at home than they are away. But yeah, I don't love it. This is when you say outscore that? I guess that's in terms of pure FPL points, right? So
yes, so Hoyland, obviously, and just to be clear as well, not like individually, right? Hoyland, yeah, and Garnacho combined will outscore Alvarez, and you know, I feel that's fair because of the fact that it's two games versus 2 games, right?
Yeah, so I've got 2 games versus 2 games. I've got 2 players,
and also because Hoyland and Garnacho ultimately will take returns off each other if they
return, they are playing
in the same game, whereas Alvarez has, you know, his own full 2 matches to
yeah,
return.
Yeah, no, I get that, and that, you know, I guess it adds together to 2 away fixtures versus 2 home fixtures. But I do think that Garnacho and Hoyland are very like, well, they're, I think they're very likely to both start, which means that you're looking at, you know, 120 minutes between them at least. Don't know if you get that from Julian Alvarez. If you do, I can see 120 minutes kind of being his ceiling, whereas I feel like it's Garnacho and Hoyland's floor.
I mean,
the home thing tempts me, if I'm honest. But yeah, and yes, you can say.
Well, in putting this together, as you can probably tell by the introduction,
yeah.
I got very much carried away by my excitement about Hoyland's goal scoring recently and all the reports about Sir Jim getting approved and then suddenly all this coming out about Ashworth to United, right?
Yeah.
I don't think those things are coincidental, right? So I actually, you know, hesitated because I really strongly felt this was very a bit too against my own favour. I really thought, like, Alvarez did not play a single minute tonight, not because he's unfit, just because that's the team that Pep chose, and he obviously doesn't like making subs in those big games seemingly, but Alvarez has been very regular in the Premier League. I would think the most Bernardo Silva and Grealish have come out of this game with Knox. I would say Alvarez is probably one of the top contenders you could have for starting both games in this double game week.
The FPL cognizant must disagree with you because he's like the fifth or third most transferred player out this game week.
Yeah, but that's all tied up in the Nunes thing and people getting Haaland back in when they didn't have him before, right? And also, we're not talking about having him in your team necessarily directly, right? We're talking about him versus Hoyland and Garnacho here. So
sure. But I think if people thought that he was going to start both games, then they wouldn't necessarily be desperate to make the move. I mean, they would be to Haaland, sure, but maybe not.
I mean, also the people that you're talking about are people who've made transfers before this game and we knew about the minute tonight.
Yeah, totally appreciate that.
But so I thought really this is, he's got a much better chance of outscoring those two combined. I thought it'd be one you'd be wanting to take, but obviously United were.
He's not a prolific goal scorer. I mean, to what extent is a Haaland and Garnacho? A Hoyland and Garnacho. I mean, you know, they're not either. But you know, Alvarez has. Yeah, he's blanked in three of his last four. I don't like it when he plays in midfield as much, and you think that Haaland's gonna play, so yeah, I don't love it if I'm completely honest. I get why you put it out there, but I don't think I can take you up on it. It frankly feels very 50-50, and I guess that when I feel like it's that tight, I guess I'm just gonna have to go with my gut, which isn't very mathsy or scientific, but my gut is to avoid it, I think. So you know, if it comes off, then fair play, I was wrong, but it does feel kind of more like one that I'm just kind of gonna have to take a hunch on, really. And I think my gut says no. My instant reaction was no, and I think I'm gonna stick with that, I think. But I still like it as a proposition. I think it's a really interesting one as well, and a little bit different for this segment. But
I mean, this makes me want to ask you whether you'll have a tenner with me on, and I'll have Alvarez then.
We'll take that off air, I think. I think that, you know, all that does is make it a bit more fun and make it have a consequence. It's not one that I feel strongly about, but I think it's one that, you know, I guess it is just like I say, a bit of a hunch and a bit of a gut reaction.
Yeah, well, fair enough. I mean, you know, we had other arguments I was going to bring into this were that we'd spoken about earlier in the season, Luton at home being a little bit better defensively.
United
not being consistent with their chance creation and stuff. But look, yeah, you sound like you're fairly settled on your decision. So
yeah, I think I am. I mean, I could absolutely see both players blanking this game week, or like all three players blanking this game week, which, you know, doesn't help anyone really, does it? But yeah, I think I'm going to stick with my decision not to take it. But I do like it. I think it's a really interesting proposition. But yeah, I just don't think I can do it. So yeah, we'll move on to my one. I mean, I'll be interested to see what you think of this one. But I have deliberately appealed to yeah, deliberately appeal to what something that I think that you're gonna enjoy, or at least have a bit of internal wrangling over. My honey trap for you this week is that Darwin Núñez does not score this game week.
Okay, well, I mean, I think straight away I'm probably taking it.
He can assist, obviously, so I didn't say return, but he doesn't score a goal this game week.
Yeah, that does make it a bit harder, because his expected assist numbers have been so high, is making me feel quite confident in a return of some kind. I can't be 100% sure he starts both. I could absolutely see one start, one bench, but even then, I think with the fixtures, I mean, I wonder what his anytime price in the two games would be. I think I'd have to think that heavily when they're combined, it'd be over 50% in my favour chance of him of scoring in one of the two games. So I'm not a big fan. I don't think it definitely happens, but I feel like there's more chance it happening than not. So I'm gonna sit quite simply just take that, I think.
Great stuff. Okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, not to be a showman, but I didn't do the maths on it. But I think it's a good, I think it's an interesting one for the pod and for just how I think we both feel about him. But yeah, it kind of is one that's, as we mentioned on the radar, it's his poor finishing ability versus volume of chances. And I guess it's okay to side with volume of chances. But I'm gonna side with poor finishing ability, I think, for the purpose of the honey trap. So yeah, there we go.
Okay, yeah,
great stuff. Well, let's move on to captaincy, Andy, and I'm going to start with the simple-ish question. Well, simple question to ask, maybe not to answer. Is this the week for the triple captainship?
As we said at the start, the City minutes in the Champions League today have spooked me a little bit more than I would have wanted. That said, you know, Haaland is likely to play 120 minutes in a worst case scenario this game week. There's a chance it's more. So 120 minutes of Erling Haaland, obviously 180 minutes is what you'd ideally want, but 120 minutes plus of Erling Haaland at home sounds like, to me, your best chance of optimizing your triple captainship than you're going to get at any point during the season, really, doesn't it? I know a lot of people recently are pointing towards Solanke in 28, and he is, you know, if he's fit, a guaranteed starter with two very attractive home fixtures against bad defenses for a team that are creating loads. So, and he's on pens. So, yeah, get all those upsides of Solanke, but like, Solanke doesn't have the consistency or the ceiling of Erling Haaland, and yes, he's in good form at the moment, but you know that he just still leagues apart. Like, and that's no offense to Dom Solanke, but just like no one almost touches the levels Haaland's reached in the last, you know, season and a half. So, for me, I think if you're not going Haaland, maybe you can have a little bit more think, because there's cons to a lot of the other, you know, options potentially. I could see an argument if you're really not confident in Haaland's minutes for captaining someone else this game week, possibly. But I think if you're I think the triple captainship can only be reserved for the big man this game week. Otherwise, you might have, if you're not confident in him as the captain option, then you might have better opportunities at other points in the season when there's other doubles coming up.
I think that makes sense. I think had there been any more certainty, and I guess there could still be, but I think if there was any more certainty over Salah's fitness, I think there could be a Salah versus Haaland triple captaincy case. I think equally, if you're concerned about Haaland minutes, you should definitely be concerned about Kevin De Bruyne minutes, and therefore that would rule out triple captaincy on him this game week. And then, I think we've said this before, we've said this on, you know, in previous seasons, but I think the fact that City's double this game week is two home games, I think it appeals a lot. And looking ahead to game week 34 and 37, when City could double again, then both of those doubles will feature at least one away game. And potentially, I think it would feature two away games. So if it's in 34, it would be Brighton away and Tottenham away. And then if they only end up having a single in 34, then I guess 37 would be Fulham away and Tottenham away. So, or I guess Fulham away and Brighton away. So, you know, I guess if it's Fulham Brighton, it's, you know, not a bad double. But Chelsea Brentford, given the state that Chelsea are in at the minute, given that Brentford have been shipping goals considerably, I think if you're going to play it on Erling Haaland, this game week does feel like the one. I think the other added things into that, Andy, and you know, you've mentioned this before, is that, you know, if it is in 34, it'll be the midweek. Yeah, you know, they'd have a double in between Champions League quarterfinals and semi-finals, and if it was 37, it would be just after a Champions League semi-final and possibly ahead of a Champions League final. So all of those things need to be factored in. But also at this point, you know he's fit, and he might not be fit for 34, and he might not be fit for 37. You know, we don't know about Liverpool. Again, you know, I think their doubles potentially later on in the season could include a Merseyside derby. Maybe you see that as a good thing. Maybe you don't. But it does feel at this point that Chelsea Brentford at home for City feels like a good place to play your triple captainship on Erling Haaland. I agree with you that if you're not thinking, if you're worried about minutes, then maybe wait. In which case, it isn't really a triple captaincy conversation at all. It's just a captaincy one. And I think in that case, then, you know, Trent, if he's fit, Kevin De Bruyne, absolutely, Phil Foden, possibly, Mo Salah, if he's fit. I think they're all very, very good options for captaincy this week. But if it is triple, it feels like Erling. And I think if you're looking for a City double game week, this does feel like the best one you're going to get possibly this year. But yeah, I do agree with you a little bit. I mean, I do think if I was to rank possible triple captaincy options, I do think that Solanke in 28 is up there, maybe as the second best one that we've got. That might be biased a little bit by the fact that it's the only other one we know about at this point. But yeah, I do. I just like those home games against Sheffield United and Luton. So yeah, if you are worried about Haaland minutes, I think I'd be very tempted by Solanke in 28 versus an unknown, saving it for an unknown opportunity in 34 and 37. And I guess the other thing to say about 34 and 37 is that you may well be bench boosting or free hitting in those game weeks, so you can't triple captain as well. So I think that adds another sort of tick in the box for game week 25.
No, yeah, I mean, I agree basically on all of that. Yeah, there's a lot of unknown, that there is a unknown this week in the Haaland minutes and starts, particularly like I said, with those Champions League minutes he's played. But there are a significant number of unknowns about fitness and rotation in future doubles for anyone, including Salah, Haaland. Including Haaland, and we know a lot of things about Haaland this week, in that unless there's more news that comes out at this point, 11 p.m. on Tuesday after the City game, there's no Haaland injury that we're aware of. We know that they're 3-1 up. We know that they don't have a cup final in game week 26 like Liverpool do. So, you know, lots of things that point towards, if you're going to use the triple, use it on Haaland. Yeah,
absolutely. All right. Is that everything on captaincy, Andy? I think that probably is.
I mean, yeah, you briefly mentioned that if you're not feeling as confident in those Haaland minutes, you mentioned some of the other potential options, and yeah, I guess there will be some out there screaming Darwin Nunes, maybe.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know what I think about him based off my honey trap. So,
well, true. Yeah. And KDB, although he has the same minutes issue with having played the full 90 in the Champions League. But if, yeah, for whatever reason, you're more confident in his minutes than Haaland's, then yeah, clearly a good captain option too.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Okay, let's leave it there, Andy. And let's finish, as we always do, with a little game we like to call Who the Heck Is Stat? Each week, Andy and I take it in turns to pick a player from the FPL universe that has to be owned by at least 5% of managers, and the other person has to guess who it is. If they guess it after they get 5 clues. If they guess it after the first clue, they get 5 points. After the second clue, they get 4 points, and so on and so forth. And then each time they hear a new clue, they get 2 minutes to stick or twist on their previous guess, so we don't reveal the answers to the end. So you can play along wherever you are listening to the FPL Lounge podcast. I got 3 points last week with Cole Palmer. I currently trail 30 points to Andy's 30 points to my 24. My turn to pick a player for Andy. How are you feeling? You ready?
I'm going to play the late card again.
It is a late record. So.
Been a busy day, so no. Been very ill. Get all your violins out for me.
Yeah.
But hey, right, well, I've got a lovely little lead to cushion me, so it's all good.
You have indeed. All right, well, let's crack on. And I'll start with clue number one. It is this player's seventh season in FPL, and including this season, they've only not registered at least 100 points in an FPL season once. Who the heck is Stat?
So they've got at least 100 points already this year, and they've got 100 points in 6 of their 7 years, including this year. Seventh year. That's the number that's tricky to think of, isn't it? Who's, which player could it be their seventh year? Okay, Brentford and Liverpool. Not Brentford. I guess maybe Ben Mee from Brentford, because he was at Burnley before. But we'll come back to that. Liverpool, I suppose there's possibly a few. I'm trying to think. Seven for Liverpool. Would Trent be seven? To have 100 points so far, they've got to be someone. Is there going to be many players with over 100 points? I don't know. Trent could be in the range of seventh season. Would he have had 100 points? He's had a few more returns recently. Seems like a big number. Could be around about 7 seasons, though, and maybe the one where he hasn't had it was when he was young or injured or something. At least it's an option. Arsenal, Saka could be seventh season. Feel like it might only be something like fifth for him. Balls. I've only got down to the second fixture. Spent too long thinking about Trent. Gonna probably have to go with him.
No, it is quite okay. I guess when you're only getting down to the second fixture because you're seriously considering a player, it might kind of make sense, doesn't it? So, anyway, that's
not particularly effective or efficient strategy, though. But yeah.
No, true, but yeah, it's good to think about players, I suppose. Clue number two then. This player has the fifth best XG among his position group this season, but drops out of the top 10 when it comes to XGI. I'll just add that those XG and XGI figures are from the official site. Who the heck is Stat?
Top 5 for XG, but drops out when it comes to XGI. So basically,
Among his position group,
not great on the assists, basically, is the point there then. So that obviously moves you away from Trent, potentially, albeit we know his assist numbers have been lower this year because we've spoken about it a few times, and he has got some XG. So I suppose it's in the realms of possibility that it could still be him. Particularly amongst his position group, although maybe you'd think he'd be higher than even top 5. So 100 points from goals rather than assists. Ollie Watkins. Could be Ollie Watkins. And we're now at fixture three in the list. Yep, seven seasons could be. I mean, he's got points from assists, but I know his XA has been quite low. Would he be in the top five strikers for XG? Probably. Maybe his numbers have been not as much as you want them to be. I'm not sure. Okay. Newcastle, Bournemouth, don't think seven seasons. Forest, West Ham, and nowhere, everyone 100 points. Spurs won't have people with 100 points, surely. City, seventh season. Who could be seventh season? Oh, I don't think I've got enough to go on here.
And 10 seconds.
So I'm probably sticking on Trent, although I think Saka and Watkins could be in the conversation. But I'm going to stick on Trent at this point.
No problem. Clue number three, then. This player is his club's second highest point scorer and their second highest owned player. Who the heck is that?
That doesn't necessarily draw me away from him either, because you'd say Salah above him on possibly both of those counts. I know Salah's ownership's dropped since him being injured. Would it have dropped below Trent's? Seems unlikely. Second highest owned, second highest point scorer. Is that what you said?
That is what I said, yes.
Yeah. Saka's going to be the highest owned, so it's not Saka. Watkins going to be the highest owned Villa player, so it's not going to be Watkins. So this leans me towards sticking on Trent again. That's ruled out the two other people I'd thought of. I suppose who else? Try and think about like 100 points scorers. Is the other tactic. Spurs, I said no one. City and Chelsea. I guess Phil Foden is going to be in that age range. Exactly. And Trent might well have got up to 100 points. Will he now be the second highest owned City player? Will he be above KDB? It's a maybe. I don't think he will be.
10 seconds.
Foden feels like a maybe, but I feel like I've got to stick
you
on
out of time.
Trent. I think I've got to stick on Trent because he could be second highest owned still and second highest scoring for Liverpool. So stick.
Cool. Okay, then. Clue number four. This player has been listed as both a midfielder and a forward in his FPL history and has also played for three different teams. Who the heck is that?
Well, that throws a big old spanner in the works, doesn't it? Because that's no one that I've mentioned. Three different teams. Has been listed as a forward and a midfielder. Richarlison can't be on 100 points, can he? Because he's had Everton, Spurs, Watford. Is that his other team? Could well be second highest owned at Spurs. Wouldn't be doing XA numbers. Would he be in the top five for XG amongst midfielders? That feels a bit rich. As does 100 points for Richarlison, frankly. Seven seasons is probably about right. there can't be many people who've had three teams and also on 100 points this season. What's some of the other clues? What clues haven't I said here?
Fifth best XG, but I dropped out the top 10 for XGI. Second highest point scorer at his club. Second highest owned player. Midfielder and forward. Seventh season. Registered 100 points in all but one FPL season.
You've had
30 seconds. So you've got 30 seconds left.
Fairly regular starter for most of the teams he's played for. So I can see the 100 points thing being true for Richarlison. It can't be any of the other people I've mentioned, so I've got to have to switch on to someone. He has been a midfielder and a forward. Only one that springs to mind is Jota. Hasn't played for three teams, though. So on that basis, I think I've got to switch to Richarlison, even though there are a couple of things there I don't feel that confident on, which are the 100 points and the second highest owned Spurs player and the XG, top five XG from a midfielder.
So half the clues you're not sure about, but you're
well, it sounds odd for Richarlison to be in the top five for XG for midfielders, but look, three clubs. So
let's see if clue five makes it any clearer or makes you switch off. So this player has scored only once in the first 15 game weeks of the season, but has since scored 9 times in the last 9 game weeks. Who the heck is Stat?
On a broad level, that roughly makes sense from a trend point of view. I obviously am aware that he didn't score many early on because lots of people had him, and he has scored a few more recently. He's been a lot more popular, and I've owned him, and he has scored a few goals for me since I've owned him. 9 in the last 9 sounds surprisingly high, as does a lot of those other things I said. So what I need to do is try and find if there are any other options it could possibly be, because this doesn't make me convinced. Grealish has only played for 2 teams, wouldn't be up there 100 points. Sterling, Liverpool, City, Chelsea won't be the top 5 XG for midfielders, surely. Probably had more, yeah, will have definitely had more than 7 seasons. Who else? Brighton, Sheffield United, no. Luton, no. United, no. They've been there 7 seasons, played for 3 different teams.
30 seconds.
Everton and Palace, I can't think of any. So in terms of the 3 clubs and 7th season thing, I can't think of anyone else that would even come close to fitting that. 9 goals. Has he really scored 9 in the last 9? And is he really top amongst midfielders in top 5?
10 seconds.
With the Sakas of the world, the Salahs of the world, and Mbeumo earlier in the season.
Got less than 5 seconds.
Oh, I've got to stick because I literally cannot think of any other person who fits the 7 years and 3 clubs, but I don't feel great about this one.
Well, you should feel great about it. 2 points to Andy Case. It is indeed Richarlison. Yeah, I regret somewhat the order of my clues. Not necessarily because I regret you getting 2 points, but I do feel it in hindsight that clue 4 was easier than clue 5. And if they're supposed to go in difficulty order, then yeah. And it was something that I ummed and ahed about. But ultimately, yeah, I think the three club and the fact that it had been a midfielder and a forward kind of was a bit of a giveaway. But yeah, equally, it wasn't a giveaway in the sense that it didn't really tally up with some of your extra clues or some of the other clues. I think
there's one thing in terms of putting them in the order of easiness, and I probably would agree that that one was more helpful, at least in guiding me towards the right person. There's a balance between that and versus like literally none of the other clues helped in some, right? That was the main and only one. And so
I hadn't given you like position or any real other kind of like non-statsy clue really up to clue four. So I think I had to give, had to throw you a bone there, really.
Well, not only had you not given me any of that, you'd given me ones which would quite clearly not probably sound like Richarlison, right? Like, sure, to say top five XG amongst position group, no one in their right mind would pick Richarlison as a top five XG midfielder, would they? So yeah, it would very much throw you away. Like, straight away, when I went down Spurs during that third clue, I was just like, well, absolutely not. No one from them's going to be in the top five.
I think the only thing that I'd say, I think that we probably both would be guilty of, I think, at this point in the season, is that just recognising that there's been 24 game weeks now and that, like, 100 points isn't the highest barrier anymore. I still kind of think in my head, I still feel like I'm like a game in like the game week 18 mindset. But yeah, like, there are lots of players in the game, especially midfielders, frankly. But you know, a handful of forwards as well that have over 100 points. Like, Hwang has 100 points. Odegaard's got 100 points. James Ward-Prowse has got 100 points. There's quite a few.
I mean, you're saying
lots,
but there's 19.
I mean,
in
I
the
think
whole of FPL, there's 19 players over. So I wouldn't say that's lots.
No, but I think that, like, I think we need to get out of the mindset that, like, 100 points is reserved for Haaland and Salah at this point, which I think is perhaps where I would be until I saw that there are quite a few players that have now kind of broken it. I mean, you know, we ordinarily say that in a 38 game season, that 100 points isn't the biggest barrier, and it isn't. And you know, there are obviously still only, you know, 19 players that have broken it after 24 game weeks, but it isn't just reserved for players that are having outstanding seasons so far. Yeah, you know, there are some pretty run of the mill, not great FPL assets that are in that group now, particularly in midfield, I guess. So yeah, I think that's maybe just requires the mindset shift. But yeah, so he's on 105. The only season where he hasn't broken 100 was last year, where obviously he wasn't at all regular for his team. You got the three clubs that he's played for. Yeah, he's behind Porro for ownership at Spurs, and then behind Son for points at Spurs so far this season. Yeah, fifth XG, I think, is interesting. Yeah, I agree, probably doesn't make you think of Richarlison, but I think that when you did narrow it down on him, I think you thought it made sense that his XA wasn't particularly great. And then, yeah, had a pretty horrendous start to the season, but seems to have finally found his form. So
even then, though, like I said, 9 in 9 was very surprising. I knew he had more goals recently, but nine sounded way, in my head it might have been like 5 or 6.
Yeah, I mean, he's only blanked twice since game week 16, and then he's got a brace twice, so yeah, that makes up for it. But yeah, he's on quite an outrageous goal scoring run, really. But yeah, there we are. As we kind of said in the anyone else section of the radar, I'd be interested to see if he keeps his place now Son's back from the Asian Cup. But yeah, that's, time will tell. But anyway, either way, 2 points for you, Andy Case, this game week, and yeah, an extension of your lead. Let's leave it there. Let's wrap this overly long pod up. But if our listeners have any questions about how to navigate game week 25 and 26 and 28 and 29, the big strategy season in FPL, how can they get in touch?
Well, if the 90-odd minutes we've waffed on for here hasn't done enough for them, they can find us on Twitter or Instagram at FPL_lounge. And I suppose it will be later in the week when people might have those questions, and we're only able to record here on Tuesday. So perhaps there might be things people want to investigate with us. Do let us know.
Absolutely. And do remember to rate, review and subscribe wherever you get your podcast from. We love to hear from you. Yeah, we will be back ahead of blank game week 26. Hopefully we'll be recording maybe a little bit later in the game week, but ultimately it doesn't matter. I'm sure it will still be in your feeds around Thursday or Friday ahead of the next Saturday's deadline. But Andy, until then,
thanks for joining us in the FPL Lounge.